We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
This morning we have state representatives with us in studio, all from Rutherford County, of course. We've got state representatives Mike Sparks, Brian Terry, and Robert Stevens. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good. Well, thank you for having us.
Anything big, exciting going on right now in the General Assembly?
Well, this past week we had, at least in the House, the Speaker decided this time that we would pause all the other committees except for the Finance Committee, so that Finance Committee met all week. You know, they have the departments come in and present their budget and, you know, evaluate what they've done in the past and then what their priorities are for the next year. And so they basically did a really deep dive into the budget this year. And so that was the first time they did that. And so you would think those of us that aren't on finance would have a little bit more free time, I guess you could say, but that really wasn't the case. There was a lot more meetings. And for those of us, it actually gave some of us a chance to actually work on our own bills. Yeah. and get stuff in order and have different meetings from that aspect. And so my understanding is, like, next week, all the members that weren't on finance, even those that were, but those that weren't on finance worked on their own bills. And so there's like a, I don't know if it's a record number of bills that have been put on for next week, but next week is going to be an incredibly busy, which is good that we're finally able to get some of these bills going, because it's been kind of slow up to this point.
I'm curious, because I was thinking back when you guys were on last time, the topic came up about honesty and heads of departments within the state, and when they give financial information, how much of that are you able to verify? All right, well, this is accurate, but this over here, this doesn't sound right.
You know, I'm on budget and it's long meetings. We wrapped up some hearings yesterday. You know, that was Representative Rudd that brought that issue up. It would be hard for me as just a representative to really see if this is misleading. I mean, I had two things happen this week, and to kind of pick on what Tim's saying, you know, I had asked the chairman of Health and Human Services, I said, talk about the state of health with Tennessee. And he said, oh, we're in good health, da da da. And I said, I'm going to have to disagree with you. And I started citing statistics with our state. I mean, we're a very unhealthy state. We rank 45th in overall health, longevity. The lifespan of a Tennessean is that close to Russia. And I know that sounds odd. I mean, just what I've been checking, type 2 diabetes, our children are 38-40% obese. And I was a little disappointed in the guy that he didn't have the answer. And I wasn't trying to embarrass him. I just thought the guy was going to know these statistics. You know, he's chairman of health, you know. And then I asked TDOC, Frank Strada, and nice guy, not knocking him, but I asked him what it's going to cost us to build us a new state prison, because I'm, you know, it looks like we're probably going to have to build a new state prison next couple of years, offer some relief to Rutherford County and other local jails. And he didn't have the answer. And I thought, man, I mean, if you're the commissioner of TDOC, you should have a ballpark answer of what it is, a square foot or to build a new state prison. So, I mean, maybe that's a little bit of where Tim is speaking. I haven't had anybody that I thought was fibbing any numbers. I mean, you know, they're trying to balance their budget like everybody else is. But, you know, Tennessee, I think we're going to get under some financial constraints in the next few years.
So what topic led to the idea of this needing a new prison, too? I mean...
Well, I think the jail overcrowding, you know, is, I mean, that's one. You know, I know Mayor Joe Carr and Commissioner Rick Hall has been concerned, and others have been concerned, even when Robert and I were on the county commission, was the jailed inmate reimbursement rates, which is lower. It needs to be increased. And William Lambert, our leader, when I brought it up and cited Rick's concerns and the mayor's concerns, the leader Lambert said, you know, we're probably going to be ready to build a new jail or a new state prison. A lot of people don't see, I don't think they take it seriously. Our country incarcerates more people than any country on the face of the earth. And now El Salvador has beat us, if you've seen what that new leader has done. Now that he's locked up a lot of gang members. But, you know, I think we need to rethink how we're looking at some of these things and help people, whether it's addiction, mental health, maybe leveraging nonprofits like Men of Valor and some other groups, or Hustle Recovery, some of these groups, to try to help people to release some of the overcrowding. In my opinion, the whole system is unsustainable, whether it's the county building, you know, a school that was $90 million a couple of years ago, now it's, what, 180, 190 million. I mean, how is that sustainable? You know, or a jail that may cost. So I talked to the mayor this morning, Mayor Carr, and he thought they may be able to get it down to 300 million to 325 million. But sadly, you know, you're building a jail when you can't build a school. I mean, those are. And I was telling a reporter the day that heard my comments. She was asking about it, and I said, "Man, these are little signs that really worry me, because I didn't see that as a young county commissioner. I didn't see that when I was on the Smyrna Planning Committee. Those are little cracks in the foundation, in my opinion, of our culture, and we need to be very cognitive and discerning of what the needs are. You know, not only in our community, but the state as well."
To follow up on your question and about the, you know, about the trust with the departments or anything like that, you know, I do want to say that whether you're a legislator or, you know, somebody that's there to testify, or the departments that come there to testify either for or against your bill or put in a budget hearing, you know, I know as being a committee chairman, when I have them come present before me, you know, you tell them, yeah, this is what I, you know, want you to present, and this is, and so they prepare for that. But then when you get before a committee or you get in the well up on the chamber floor, I even have my interns and, you know, I have them, you know, we work with questions and, like, you know, what might I be asked? And let's, you know, what are some things that might be asked on this bill or what? And you can never prepare for all those questions. Then there are questions that come out of the blue. And so having a commissioner or somebody in front of you, I don't expect them to know everything, but I do expect them, if it gets brought up, for them to follow up with me and get me the information that I need. But I will say that, you know, there's some issues that are out there, and it's happened to me before when you've got a bill that you're taking into committee, and then, you know, if you don't ask the right questions, or if you're not sitting there with their liaisons or all that beforehand and asking the right questions and getting that beforehand, when you walk into that room and they don't like your bill, they'll bring things up that, you know, that you weren't prepared for.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I think rubs a lot of legislators the wrong way, is that, you know, if I've got a bill, you should tell me what you don't like with that bill. Now, I'll give you an example. This was last year. Representative Mary Littleton had a bill, and I can't even remember what it was, but mental health and substance abuse, they had an issue with it, and it was actually coming through my committee. And they told them what was, you know, wrong with the bill. And I still remember being there. It was probably 6 o'clock at night, and I'm there with the liaison, Representative Littleton, and we're sitting in her office and walking through all the issues with potential with the bill, what we can do, what could be changed. And that's an example of government actually working. Because, I mean, they were there late hours and trying to get the right answer. But not all, that doesn't happen on every bill. And it's, I think that is kind of where there's a little bit of a disconnect.
I mean, I guess I could see where that's good and bad. I mean, you want to hear the pros and the cons, but at the same time, if you're the one proposing the bill, I could see where that'd be irritating, but at the same time needed.
Well, yeah, and so I'll tell you another bill like that's coming through this year. I won't tell you exactly which bill it is, but on paper, when you hear, you know, what the bill is presented as, or you see the title of the bill, everybody in the committee was like, "Oh, you know, how do you vote against this?" And I said, "Well, we already do this. This is something that's duplicative. We already do this, and what this person is proposing that we do adds another layer and increase the cost another $150,000 of taxpayers that we don't need because we already do." And, you know, then the departments actually went and talked to this representative, and the representative just wants to create a headline and, you know, and make a presentation. And then when we're the bad guys, because we have to explain, we already do this. And so then the headline is, you know, Dr. Terry voted against such and such. And it's like, well, we already do that, you know. And so those are some of the things that happen.
And, you know, I think the general public, when you hear about new bills being presented, some of them sound great on the surface. But you really have to do a deep dive and figure out, well, what's the ripple effect of this? You know, what other departments will this impact? And how many people could this potentially hurt if we do it this way instead of that way? I mean, there's a lot of things that people don't think about.
Yeah, and that's actually got a college student that I do a little talk with about, you know, weekly, and I actually did one last week, and the title of it was There Ought to Be a Law. And people will have these ideas or something pops up and they say, you know, there ought to be a law. And then when you go through it and you look at it and you're like, okay, here's our premise, you know, what's our goal here? Then you realize either A, we already do it, or there's some unintended consequences, or, you know, you don't think the whole thing through. But the headline is what you think there ought to be that law for, and people don't, you know, like when you're reading the newspaper or look at the news or online or whatever, it's people look at the headline, they might get to the introductory paragraph, but when you actually start diving into it, they realize, oh, you know, we don't need this, or this has... It's more complex than people think.
And that's part of the problem with today's society. We live in these 5 to 10 second sound bites, and we don't take the time to read the entire article. You know, we read the first two paragraphs, if even that, just to get an idea.
Clickbait.
There's a lot of clickbait out there.
I mean, yeah. You look at some of the reporting of Phil Williams. I mean, one, it's biased. I mean, he's not going to come after, you know, real issues that are really solving problems in our country. You know, picking up on what Dr. Terry said, I met with legal yesterday. I've got this predatory lending bill, and it's going to be difficult. I mean, like I was telling the reporter, I said, I don't have 330 lobbyists running around the Capitol. I mean, literally, I'll have 100 lobbyists, maybe 12, maybe 20 fighting me, but these are the most powerful people in the state of Tennessee that's going to come against me on this issue. You know, and it's just engaging a conversation. The bill's probably not going to pass, but legal told me the other day, they said, she said, well, just be ready. She did give me a heads up, just be ready that someone's going to, you know, I may even have to say, I don't know if this is going to supersede this other finance and, you know, issues. And she said, do you have anybody that you can really trust? And I'm like, not really. The bankers, they don't care about it. They're going to remain silent. Your churches are silent. The NAACP, they're silent. TMA, they're silent. I mean, you know, all these groups that we pay for, a lot of these are taxpayer funded lobbies, they're silent. And but these issues are affecting real people. You know, I like what President Trump talked about, affordability. And in fact, I'm putting that in the bill, you know, Trump's initiative, because if we don't start helping just real Americans on the streets of Tennessee on affordability, whether it's food or housing or other costs, man, this country, this state's in for a rude awakening in the next few years, man. I'm just telling you what I'm seeing, and people may not like me sharing that, but this predatory lending, that'll end up being the downfall of this entire society if we're not careful. People don't have a car, how they get to work? Then they lose their home. We had somebody call the office just yesterday. They seen me in the news with Dennis Ferrier, and thank you for Dennis being bold to talk about this issue, because it's going to take reporters to really cover this. And Phil Williams is not going to cover it because he's in on the deal. And do you think I'm right on this, Scott? Look at
it. I don't know.
He's part of the problem because he's selling advertising. You see what I'm saying? He's not going to take on an issue that they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars on advertising. You follow me?
I'm talking about
the predatory lending. I'm talking about advanced finance. I'm talking about Title Max, check into bankruptcy. All these predatory lenders you see all up and down the road that's taking advantage of your church members and your cousins and your nephews. This is real stuff. It's real. And everybody's silent. Your pastors aren't. Now, there's a few pastors talking about it. But when you look at the lobbying, you know, picking up on what Brian's saying, even this attorney, she just gave me a heads up. Hey, I'm just going to say that, you know, you may get this. And I had that woman that I made that video about, Miss Helen. You go to YouTube, type in Miss Helen Predatory Lending. And I brought it up to the AG last week. Now, this guy offers me a loan at 9%, offers this black woman a loan at 11%. So that got the AG's attention. I said, look, I'm willing to testify whatever I got to do. And these fake online reviews, you know, it's a serious issue.
I'm not for predatory lending in any way, but what do you do in those situations where you have somebody who they are making minimum wage, they don't have an education, and something comes up?
All right, Miss Helen. Well, you asked what Miss Helen should have done. Okay, I'm just saying, Miss Helen, here's a black woman. Doesn't matter if she's black, but hey, you know, in this case, it probably matters. They offered her a higher interest rate than this white guy. You know, that ought to be an issue. Somebody needs to be paying attention to that issue. And she's desperate. She's taking care of her sister that's battling breast cancer, who's special needs, in her 60s. And Miss Helen's in her 60s, I guess. And she goes in there thinking she's borrowing money at 11%.
So
it's 132%. That's called bait and switch. It's called fraud.
So the interest rate offered to her, I mean, do they both have the same background, the same, you know, bills they had to pay, the same credit scores? I mean,
oh, I don't know. She just borrowed. I mean, but it's a simple phone call that I made because I didn't know what to do to help her. You know, my Kurdish friends who sold her the car, they're calling me like, hey, man, she borrowed this money and she's getting behind. And they're talking about the repo guys calling her, try to take her car. That's the end game. And all these folks are silent. And if you're a pastor, wake up. If you're the NAACP, wake up.
But what do you do in these cases?
I mean, you don't let people get taken advantage of.
I'm saying, what do you do the end game here? All right. Well, the person missed, you know, four car payments. Do you repo it? Do you let them just?
Let's think about it. I sold 2,000 cars. I mean, I know a little bit about this stuff. Sold 2,000 cars. I mean, Dave Ramsey was one of my customers. Ned Ray McCord was my customer. I never did that kind of stuff. You know, you offer somebody a loan at 11%. Like if I told you, hey, Scott, I'm going to sell you this 2012 Camry at 10.5. Well, that's the price, 10.5. It's not you show back up and it's $24,000. I mean, that's what happened. I mean, think about this. If I told you $10,000 and you came back and it's $135,000, that would be crazy, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But that's what happened with her. She got off her loan at 11% and they charged her 132%. But here's what people need to wake up to. The whole end game was to get her baited in at 11%, and then he's repoing her car. Then he's selling the car for a profit. So in front of the AG last week on finance, I just said the motor vehicle. I've said something to motor vehicle because the dude's running dealer plates. See, Tennessee Title Pond, you can drive by there today. Tennessee Title Max, whatever it's called over there, Jackson Heights. You see the dealer plates out back. I told the state last year, you're not supposed to be running dealer plates. It's not a dealership. But so, I guarantee he's got a dealership somewhere where he's selling these cars. And I shouldn't have to be the only person in Tennessee that seems to give a shit about this kind of stuff, Scott. You know what I mean? I mean, for real. I shouldn't be the only one. I should not be the only one. People need to wake up to what's going on in your community. But Smyrna took a position on this, Scott. Smyrna, the town of Smyrna, shout out to Mary Esther and others. They banned this stuff. You can't come in. You know, they're not. You cannot bring in another Title Pond, Advanced Finance in the town of Smyrna. What that should be earth-shattering news that a city took a position like the town of Smyrna. Wouldn't that be? They aren't going to cover this stuff, Scott. And people need to wake up because Miss Helen, bless her heart, she would have lost her car. Her sister's battling cancer. Her sister later died. It's such a serious issue, and nobody seems to care.
So what are the answers? What are the solutions? I mean,
pass my bill. That's why. Capping this stuff.
And then
it shouldn't be 400% interest out there, folks. And folks need to wake up. County commissioners, do something about it. Stand up. Send us a resolution. School board members.
So on the flip side of all this, let's say they do repo somebody's car. They turn around and sell it. Sell it for a profit. Why not pass a law to where whatever that profit is on the car they repoed, they pay that person back a percentage of, you know, what they have paid
this
into it.
This probably goes back to Representative Rudd's point about maybe, I'm not saying misleading, but when you have, like I call the department lethargic, when they are not doing their jobs, when they're not investigating a dude running dealer plates that's got this whole system, the people don't have a voice, man. You got 330 lobbies up here. That's just the ones in the book. That's not counting the taxpayer-funded lobbyists. And I don't think they show up in the book, do they? I don't think they show up.
If they are, it's probably buried.
Here's the thing about it. Oh, they're going to hate on me for talking about this. Here's the thing about it. Every one of them, I'm not even a betting man. I'm willing to wager a deal on this. These folks are making more than your representatives are. Your taxpayer-funded lobbyists are making more than any of your senators and representatives are. Is that not crazy?
I wouldn't doubt that.
I mean, I'm not even a betting man. If my pastor's listening, sorry, Brother Hazard, that I'm willing to put a wager. But no one's going to take me up on it because they know I'm right.
So, I mean, there's not an easy solution, though. I mean,
well, the solution is people need to start caring. And sorry to use profanity, Bart, if you're listening. You know, but because you're the one that told me the seven words, if you remember.
Yeah.
Don't say these words on the air. But people got to get back to community, man. It's just, there's just too much silence, man. I just left, and Robert probably tired me. Y'all talking about my grandbabies. I just left my little grandbabies, man. And I look back at Henry. He's looking at me like, where are you going? Where are you going? I just stared at him for a little bit and just said, bye, baby, and just kind of waved at him. When you have grandkids, man, You got grandkids yet?
Yeah, I got three.
Do you really?
Yeah.
But don't you think grandkids kind of make you just
They're better
snap?
Than her own kids.
They really are. And I, you know, you always hear these stories. Look at all these pictures. And now I get it. Back when I was younger, I didn't really get it. But, you know, you worry about the next generation. And I mean, it's just, I don't know. I probably take this stuff too serious when you look at the needs of our county. Because I plan on retiring here. I want my kids to grow up here. My grandkids to grow up here. Look at the traffic in Nashville. Look at this landfill. Thankfully, Dr. Terry's going to solve the problem.
That's a whole different issue. Okay.
I'll shut up and let him talk about landfill.
But the reason why grandkids are so much better is because you don't have the full responsibility of having to put them to bed every night. You don't have the full response. But I mean, you got the fun moments with them, and that's the same with society. That's the same with different bills out there.
Yeah,
you don't grasp the total picture. You know, you're not living it day in and day out.
No,
so
you're right.
So the problem is understanding and understanding the bills that are presented, understanding how loans work, understanding all this stuff.
Well, I do want to piggyback a little bit on him. So, you know, from the state of Tennessee, we try to run a conservative lean budget, but oftentimes that means that our departments, you know, we don't want to overstaff and, you know, have people in there just, you know, twiddling their thumbs and collecting a check like they do in some other states. And so the issue oftentimes is if you have a lean department or their budget's fairly constrained, you know, when you have these ideas and you have, they may not have been able to address them as you thought they might should have addressed them because they just didn't have the staff. And then now when you have a bill come forward that might actually be a good idea, what ends up happening is you end up getting a fiscal note placed on your bill, which means I had a bill a couple of years ago dealing with insurance, and Department of Commerce and Insurance, you know, put like $100,000 plus fiscal note on my bill because they were going to have to hire some actuaries and somebody else to work in the office or whatever. And, you know, the bill dies because it's not in the budget. And so, but to that point though, sometimes you have to run these type of bills, bring awareness, and then hopefully maybe the next year. So like I've got a bill that'll be coming up. I think I've got it on for next week dealing with, device registries, you know, like, defibrillators or pacemakers. It's voluntary, completely voluntary from a patient standpoint. But what I'm trying to figure out, at least from the bill perspective, is if you're going to house something like this in the Department of Health, how much is that going to cost? And so we have this Rural Healthcare Transformation Plan funds. So can we use some of this, some of the funds to get that information out to the rural areas? So if you have a doctor that's trying to take care of somebody out in rural Tennessee, they can access this information with the Department of Health and better take care of their patients there. But you have to actually run a bill to get a fiscal note to then put it in the budget next year. And so, and ironically, you know, when RFK Jr. came to town, he actually talked about doing something like this on the federal level. And so, but anyway, that's kind of the way the process sometimes unfortunately works.
One of the questions asked this morning is about education. How did Rutherford County representatives here vote on school funding and capital investment legislation? Was there a particular bill
or the scholarship bill?
I don't know. How does, like here in Rutherford County, the Rutherford County schools, they get a portion of their funding from the state. How is that divvied up, and how does the General Assembly, how do they get involved in that, or do they, or is it just already set?
Well, we have a formula called TISA, and that has a base amount per student that the state pays for each student in public or charter schools, and then there are some additional weights that can be added if you have students with disabilities or students that have English as a second language, high growth areas. There's maybe a few more, but if you have a lot of folks in these categories, you get more money. And so I'm not exactly sure what bill the question covers, because we haven't voted on anything like that this year that I'm aware of. But last year we did, when we did the school choice, there was a $25 per person payment that was going to be made to local school systems that are fast growing. So I think everybody in our delegation supported that.
Yeah, that, and I would just say, you know, from before TISA with the BEP, and that formula had been there for decades, and it was weighted against growth counties like Rutherford County. And so we fought pretty much every session to try to make it fair to our county. There was, you know, a handful of counties that it was really disadvantaging the way that it was currently set up. And we would get, I guess, you know, Leader Lambert and Leader, I think may have been Leader Johnson, carried a bill almost every year trying to assist growth counties. And so if the leaders of both chambers are carrying the bill to get more funding to growth counties like ours, and they couldn't get the bill passed, that tells you what we were up against. But eventually, we, you know, we had, I think we sent, all signed a resolution. We ran some bills to try to do a study on this. And then eventually it got moved into what's TISA, which now gets more funding for our schools. But yeah, like last year in that bill, that was one of the sticking points for me in particular, was getting funding for growth counties and getting that extra money for infrastructure for growth counties. And it's like $25 per student. And so to me, you know, that and that extra funding that we get in public education for that, sometimes, unfortunately, that's how, you know, sometimes in a bill may not be exactly what you want. You may have to give something up on this side to get what you need on this side. But you know that, you know, you don't have the votes to get the funding for the growth counties unless you vote for something else over here. And sometimes that's the double-edged swords of some bills, particularly some administrative bills. But you know, we're all supportive of getting more funding for our growth.
Well, some of the notes I've got here from 2020 to 2026, just education, a funding increase by $2.3 billion or 44%. Here's some other numbers. Budget request include $170 million for TISA, which was Dr. Terry's talking about, which is the funding formula, $112 million to expand education freedom scholarships to meet students' demand. And there is a demand, whether you like it or not, there's people applying. $5 million for summer learning camps and transportation, $2.6 for parental paid leave, for roughly $500,000 for school turnaround programs to set students on a path to success, $2.8 million for information technology funding, and $210,000 for AI training. We invest a lot of money in education. You know, some would argue that the return on investment is not what it was back in our day. You know, you hear a lot of behavior problems in schools, and you know, it's, I mean, we had a walkout. What, I don't think our students did that, but some other counties had a walkout. Man, we never walked out of school. You'd got your butt busted when I was in school. You know what I mean?
And here,
in school and at home,
we would have. I mean, seriously, I was one of those kids that got paddled all the time.
Here's another one, and it's asking, why can't those who are on disability when jailed, why can't their check go to the jail to help pay for their stay in jail, as opposed to it just being cut off during the months they are behind bars?
I'm not familiar with that. And I mean, that's something that maybe they could approach our office or your county commissioner, who's voting on the sheriff's budget, who's responsible for this $320 or $400 million jail expansion. But that's a great question. I don't know if I wouldn't think the funds are cut off, but if that's happening, somebody needs to bring awareness to it.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure. Let's take a quick break, then we will come back. Feel free to text in any questions. 615-893-1450. Again, text them in 615-893-1450. This morning we have our state representatives on the air with us today that serve here in Rutherford County. And again with us today, State Representatives Mike Sparks, Brian Terry, and Robert Stevens.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you.
Don't be trashy, recycle classy,
Recycling isn't just about tossing materials in a bin. It's about knowing which materials are accepted. Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle Right Tennessee.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Want to take charge of your energy bill? Download the free MyMTE app to track your usage, pay bills, and report outages right from your phone. Download in the App Store today.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. We're trying to give them a place where they can eat with their family that's not fast food. We want to create an atmosphere where we can sit down and just have a good old-fashioned family dinner. But unfortunately now, most people can't do it at home. So, you know, two people are working, the kids' activities. And so what we're doing is we provide that and we make it affordable. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hi, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Our prices are as good or better than the box stores. I don't think you'll do better by shopping online than you would by coming in. Something new we've just added to our repertoire is drum repairs. You can have drums cut, covered, rewrapped, new hardware. We will fix them, make them look like new again. I'd like to thank you for coming by to see us again at 2762 South Church, right across from the golf course. Music World and Drummer's Den. Thank you very much for being our customers.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Time right now, 8:51. With us in studio, we have State Representatives Mike Sparks and also Robert Stevens and Brian Terry. And during that break, I know one topic that came up, the landfill. Where does everything stand on that landfill today and what's happening with it as far as working with the county, with the cities and everything?
So, great question. It's, topical, obviously, and what's going on right now is, BFI Republic has filed for a vertical expansion.
Now, is this a new filing or is this the same one?
So it's the one that I guess occurred at the end of October. And so the city challenged that and asked that BFI, stop their application process. And then they asked, filed for the for TDEC to stop the process as well. And so what has occurred is a court in Davidson County actually ruled that TDEC should stop the process, but then they also ruled that the local regional board should begin reviewing that application. And so there was that ruling, and then there was an appeal, which was the ruling was upheld, and then immediately the state and the AG's office have filed for a motion to dismiss the case. And so there's a lot of confusion on all that, and so it's very complex. I'm not an attorney. However, my understanding of the way this has gone on and the way I've tried to explain it to folks is there's essentially two routes that Republic or BFI could apply. One is what's called a major modification, and the other is an expansion. And they filed essentially the paperwork for a major modification. However, what they're really asking for is a vertical expansion. And the argument is that they filed the wrong paperwork. They should have filed the vertical expansion. However, in years past, I think when this has gone on, the locals, or when somebody has filed a vertical expansion, TDEC, I guess historically they've had people file it as a major modification. So that's what BFI filed. And so the statute says that once an application gets filed, TDEC has to start the clock. They have to start reviewing it. There's a 45-day period where they have to determine whether the application is complete or not. And so during their 45-day period, TDEC actually ruled that this is not a complete application, and they sent that information back to Republic or TDEC and or Republic or BFI and told them, you have to give us more information. So they actually stopped the clock. But what ended up happening in the courts, they issued essentially an injunction against TDEC, told them to put their pencils down. You cannot review this anymore. But then they issued what's called a writ of mandamus, which is essentially you must take action. So on one hand, they issued stop. However, you must have the regional board review the process. Well, the AG's office, I think what they're looking at it from a philosophical standpoint versus a technical standpoint. Philosophically, the judge up there ruled it is an expansion. The law does not differentiate whether it's a horizontal expansion or a vertical expansion. It is an expansion. And we actually passed something a few years ago dealing with the Chevron doctrine. And this was something I've talked with the city about and told them that this is in law. And if it's not clear, then the courts have to rule against the agency. The agency can't make up the rule. But secondly, in that law, it also says that the court has to look at what's called de novo, new. And so if TDEC has seen these things in the past and they called them a major modification or ruled it as a major modification, that doesn't matter anymore. This is new. This is a new application. This is a new issue. So they have to look at it at this issue. The state was arguing that, you know, they've done something in the past. Well, that's an invalid argument. The way it says in the statute, it just says expansion. There's federal definitions of expansion. And they said, if it's not clear, and if TDEC, if you don't think it's clear, guess what? The court has to rule against you. But what they're looking at right now is because the technicality of the writ of mandamus, how it was issued, can have impacts on other things other than a landfill. It can have statewide impact on other law. And so that's what I think the AG is concerned about, not whether philosophically, whether it's an expansion or not, or whether or not they have to do the correct application or have the regional board review and determine if it's on our 10-year cycle or not, but our 10-year plan or not. It's the technicality of, I think, the writ of mandamus, and that's what they're looking at.
You know, I was with, I appreciate Dr. Terry sending me a question. I had met with TDEC in our finance budget hearings, and Joe Carr sent me this question, so I'd asked him. It says, how is vertical expansion at Middle Point any different than a horizontal expansion when the law, TDEC regulations don't distinguish between the two? What are the landfills in Tennessee have an approved slope of greater than 3-1? They refuse to answer the question, I guess, because litigation, but I appreciate those guys. You know, I brought this issue up about five years ago, just talking about the water quality. You know, I was chairman of consumer. We don't have consumer anymore. I got rolled into commerce and some other committees. And I just said one day, and this was before I had grandbabies, I said, I want to be able to catch a fish in Persepolis Lake, bring it home, you know, with my grandkids. And it was a week later, like 4 days later, there was a TDEC alert that said, do not eat the bass in Persepolis Lake. And it was, I call those confirmation when you hear that, but it is serious. And Shane McFarland showed me a video last night. He's probably showed it to you, and you brought up the birds.
Yeah,
all the birds flying around. Talk about that issue.
So one of the issues from a vertical expansion, you know, we've got the airport here in Murfreesboro, and you have the flight path, and so it's an issue with the FAA. And so if they put essentially another 70-foot landfill on top of the current landfill, it changed the flight path of the birds that circle around all the trash.
That's crazy, man.
And then there's an issue from heat that's there, which can impact the lift and all that from flights coming in. And so it's a major problem, just not just from, you know, the quality of life that we have here in Rutherford County, but it can be dangerous you know, from those flying. And so we do not need any vertical, horizontal, any expansion whatsoever of that landfill.
And we are already out of time this morning. Again, with us today, State Representatives Mike Sparks, Brian Terry, and Robert Stevens. We're now 20 seconds away from the 9 o'clock hour. Stay with us. We do have local news coming your way next.
South Central Bank has two CD specials that will help your money grow. South Central Bank has a five-month CD with an annual percentage yield of 4.15% or a 25-month CD with an annual percentage yield of 3.8%. Two great ways to put your money to work. You choose the term that works best for you. $500 minimum balance to obtain the APY. Stop by any of our convenient South Central Bank locations today and take advantage of our two great rates. South Central Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.